What's going on, everybody? This is Nico, aka Napslow, and welcome to another episode of Sec Vibes. Today we have the great Mickey Angeline joining us today. We talk about her beginnings in the podcast game, a few awesome lift stories she has to share, her humble beginnings being a Raiders fan, as well as some public speaking tips for all of you that are thinking of starting your own podcast. So why don't you sit back, relax, or wherever you are listening from your house or your morning walk, and enjoy the vibes.
Everybody, welcome to Sack Vibes. This episode
39.
Hey,
dang,
made it to another
almost
one.
The 40?
I know. Almost the 50. 40.
Almost the 50. Almost
the really? Wait, what number is this?
39.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's we're getting up there, man. I like that we're doing this on a routine now.
I'm really happy about it.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
We're just hitting the numbers, hitting goals. Proud of us.
Yeah.
Proud of us.
Next thing you know, we're gonna be like Joe Rogan. 1,576.
Jeez, yes, so many.
Does he really?
Yeah, he's thousands.
If the local scene will allow it.
I mean, because guess who does not pay attention to all that? That would be me.
Yeah, I didn't know.
I probably should pay attention. I don't pay attention.
Hey, if it's not in your atmosphere already, you're probably doing fine. Fuck it.
No, I really should. If I'm going to get back into podcasting, I need to pay attention to how it works.
Yeah.
You follow the ones that do well, and you figure out their formula. You figure out, yeah.
Well, Joe Rogan's formula is just to have the craziest guests on now.
And he was already famous before he started his podcast.
He was a comedian.
That doesn't hurt.
Oh, word. I never knew that. I literally thought his one thing was podcasting.
Oh, hell no, honey. He's been around for a minute.
He used to be Fear Factor.
That guy?
Yes. I never realized that. In the UFC. He still hosts the UFC. It's like big matches and stuff, and then his latest thing is interviewing presidential candidates. So
yeah,
that's just gonna be a huge draw right there.
On another episode of Najee Doesn't Know Shit.
All right, who's here today?
Yeah, we're gonna turn those two things a little down just a little bit. So who we have right here is Mickey. She's an MXL artist, a podcaster, a music journalist, martial artist, activist, but most importantly, a Raiders fan.
Oh, wow. That has got to be the best intro I've had about me ever. Thank you so much. I love how you ended that, too.
Wes is dumbfounded right now.
I just drove all this way in this traffic.
Because look at that man's hat.
To get dissed. Man,
that's dang, he's the best.
You know, on top of it today.
I came today prepared.
I like it.
Prepared. And so, yeah.
Cool. All right. Right.
So, yeah. So, why Raiders are best? That's good.
Oh, my gosh.
So, I mean, first of all, how are you doing today, Mickey?
You know what? I'm having actually a really good day.
Really?
Very good day. And half of it is because I knew I was coming here today. So thank you for allowing me to get back into the game of being on podcasting and talking with people. You know, I took a hiatus for over a year of my life, just a hiatus, and I haven't done a podcast, my own podcast, since I want to say 2017.
Mm-hmm.
So
welcome back.
Thank you. Go ahead.
No, so I was gonna say, what made you want to get back in the game?
I miss the interaction of people and learning about people. You know, this is one of the best ways to learn about people is talking to them, asking the questions and getting it out there and then getting the feedback.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. And I think this is like probably one of the best ways, because I feel like through other modes and medias, they don't necessarily get as in depth. They don't do as much research. They don't focus the questions. And through the interviews, I feel like after just like an hour, 2 hours of like interviewing people, I feel like I've gotten to know them like so much better than just kind of like hanging out. Be like, oh, okay, yeah, we're going to be friends. Like, that sort of thing. Or just getting to know them better is just amazing. So, highly agree with the whole podcast thing. Like, I love this medium. And I heard someone else say it where it was like, it's the most respectful form for your audience. Because if you're doing it on Instagram, they got to be scrolling. If you're doing it on a story, if you're doing it on Facebook, if you're doing it on a video, they have to physically be watching it. But through podcasting, they could be doing dishes, they could be working out.
They could be driving. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And it's just the most respectful form, not only, I feel like, for guests, but also for the audience as well.
Absolutely. So, absolutely, without a doubt.
I'm glad that...
Yeah.
We gotta
and then you get yeah. you get connections yeah. and you you're able to not through those connections collaborate and things happen. Yeah. And that's happened for me doing yeah. this, you know. So yeah.
Yeah, no, that's literally like our just like our last podcast, like the guests we have, and you know, we're about to start collaborating with them and make something happen. So, you know, it's all through a little podcast, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah, and I think the coolest thing about it is since podcasts are just so kind of centralized and so niche that you can do your own thing, like you can run it yourself. The fact that I don't know if we had some big corporate entity on top of us, I don't think the last guest that we had on, you know, we'd have to like get them approved and like get all questions approved or whatever it might have to be done. But it's just like, no, we want to interview this person, we're just going to ask all the questions we want to ask, and it's going to be a great time. So,
and you learn, even for us, we learned a lot of things about making the podcast better,
yeah.
Through you know, people that notice things or they like and what they don't like or so. And so, yeah.
So, yeah. Mickey, being like the OG podcaster, you know what I'm saying?
Dude, I am so not OG, but
you're
okay.
The OG. You know what I'm saying?
When did you start?
2015.
So yeah, so even in 2018, like even coming out, I feel like we jumped on podcasting early. You know what I'm saying? What made you want to jump on podcasting even back then? Because I feel like that would have been like, did you even have like podcasting friends back then? Like, or was that, cause I feel like.
That's exactly how it happened. And yeah. Shout out to Noisy Snail Studios, cause they're the ones who I worked with.
Yeah.
I was doing internet radio for 2 years.
Okay.
Okay. And so V103 Rock
mm-hmm.
here in Sacramento.
Yeah. Yeah.
Had my own show. And talk about, and you were mentioning Wes
yes.
earlier about how you can ask whatever questions and not get permission. I loved internet radio because there was no, you have to put on all these commercials because there are sponsors and certain people and you have to go and you can't ask these questions. We played whatever music we wanted. Dropping F-bombs didn't matter. We had what we called a stalker cam because we did a live webcam with chat room and we were interactive with our listeners. And a friend who was an avid listener to support of our station, supported our shows, my show, kept saying, Mickey, you got to join us on a podcast. You got to do a podcast with us.
Right.
And this was like 2014. And,
okay.
And I didn't know what podcasts were.
Right.
So I was like,
super early on the game.
Super well, for me. I mean, yeah. I think podcasts were around before then, but
yeah.
I was just used to being live. Mm-hmm. And I loved that hype of, you don't know what was going to happen because nothing's edited.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, you go to the music, you come back from music. What do we talk about? What are your guests going to talk about? You do a little preview to something, but then once it goes, you just never know where it's going to go.
Yeah.
And they kept saying, you got to do it. And then my career at V103 ended. And I was doing video interviewing with ESM7. And then I thought, you know what? Let's give this a try. And that took trial and error because, see, podcasting, unlike radio, I had to learn that it wasn't in real time. So then when I did my subjects, I had to make sure that no matter when you listened to it, it was relevant.
Yeah.
See, radio, like news, you hit what's now, what's now, what's now.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that. You can't timestamp your podcast because it's like, why would we listen to that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That show isn't on anymore or that thing isn't on anymore. Like, it's different than when, if you have a guest and they want to talk about an upcoming show, but the meat and potatoes of your podcast is going to be something that no matter when they listen to it,
yeah.
it's going to be relevant, valuable. It's going to offer value.
Yeah.
And that was a trial and error, probably the first 2 or 3 episodes that, because I go back and I listen. Remember you asked me earlier,
do you
listen to your stuff? Oh man. I was going back and listening to a couple of the, and I'm like, oh man, I'm so glad I don't do that anymore. Like, you know, like the first like second or third, by the fourth, I think, podcast episode, I was finally in the groove of knowing what direction to go with it and how, and we still have fun. I mean,
yeah.
we made drinking games in like half of our episodes,
yeah,
which I teased. Who was it that said about the like thing? And I said, make it a drinking game.
No, he's,
you know,
you told me, I think you told me how much I say like or something like that.
Well, I listed, I didn't want to keep count, but I was like, that's a lot. And then I did my podcast. What did I do? It's my rants and raves.
Yeah.
About the,
on
the
Instagram.
Overuse. Yeah. The yeah, overuse
Instagram.
Of the word like. So
I feel it because I was listening to one I think a clip or something like that, or I was editing a clip and I was curious. I'm like, man, since they mentioned it, let me just see one time. I think it was in like 60 seconds. I would just see that. There you go, I already said it one time, but in 60 seconds I was curious on how many times I said like, and it was 12 times. I was like, That's ugly. That's ugly.
You want, you want a terrible story? So.
Yes, I want a terrible story. Say it to the people. Let's get a terrible story from the Niner fan.
They won yesterday.
Who did they play?
Tampa Bay.
Be nice. They're dealing with a hurricane right now. Anyways, go ahead.
I'm not going to partake. So this happened probably like senior year of high school. I was driving and I had these like three of my friends with me. They were all girls and stuff. And I was in the middle of a story and I was just ranting and raving about it, just going in like how I usually do when I story time. But I turn around halfway through and they're all just like holding up like fingers, and they all have like different amounts held up. I'm just like, what are you guys doing? They're like, 18. And I'm like, what do you mean? They said like, you said 18 times just going down this hill. I was like, oh really?
Damn.
That's bad.
It's really bad.
So I don't know if that's still a bad habit of mine, but it was bad.
And I wonder, is that an age thing? I'm not sure what your ages are. I'm not gonna. Is it a 20s thing?
It might be a Niner thing. I don't know.
It might be a Niner thing.
It might be an age thing.
Yeah, 20s.
Because for me, my focus anytime I was on the air was to not say the word "um."
Oh yeah.
That's that break you do when your brain stops and you have a brain fart. What do I say next?
I used to say that all the time.
And like I said in my rant, imagine reading a book, and as many times as you said that on the air, it was in the book.
That would be ugly.
Yeah, that's right.
You'd stop reading the book.
Exactly.
You'd stop reading the article.
So what helped you, like, learn CR? I'm not going to be overly conscious about it. Oh my God. I wasn't even tripping off of it until the last 20 minutes. I was just looking at Nico and I was like, I can't not think about it. So what helped you get over that and not say so much? Was there someone who sat you down and was, you're saying a lot, or just you listening to yourself and realizing that that's something going on?
It was just something I was aware of in general, just for public speaking, because you came to that event, I speak on panels, I speak in front of students.
Yeah.
One of the things I did for 2 years, I was speaking at San Francisco State University in the journalism class and talking about podcasting and talking about the art of interviewing.
Oh, okay.
So.
Real quick, you said video gaming?
No. The art of interviewing.
Interviewing. I was just.
You perked up. You're like, yeah.
I don't even play video games.
I want to know.
Like, that would be dope. But.
So what's going to happen, I think, is understanding how you, if you talk every day and that is what you do, then it would be individually work on not doing that every day. Mm-hmm. You talk about podcasting, what makes it very, what people love about it is they feel like they're there with you in the room. They feel a part of that conversation and they feel connected to that art, the guest.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I would think it seems like, not in the use that you're using it, but it seems like this generation of people who talk, it's so comfortable until you focus on it, you don't realize you're doing it.
Hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Because that word means other things, but when you use that other than, it gets confusing. Well, what did they mean when they said it? I use it properly just now, but we're focused so hard on it, right?
Yeah.
It just comes up. And I do think it's a generational thing, because you were talking about SF State. When I took a public speaking class there, they not only said don't try and use but they also said don't try and use light.
Me too, at San Jose.
And I already think what the next generation is going to be. So I don't know if you guys have seen what's going on the internet sphere in the teenage TikTok world, but there's this new movement of making fun of VSCO girls. I don't know if you've ever heard that.
What are VSCO girls?
Basically, it's a new age white girl. You know how like back in the day they made those like, oh yeah, white girls wear, they have Starbucks cup, North Faces, and UGG boots? So a VSCO girl is a new age, basically evolving, it's like a white girl 2.0 that people are making fun of, where it's like they wear scrunchies on their arms, they have hydro flasks with stickers on them and stuff.
Okay.
And so the whole reason I bring this up is because I feel like one of the generational things was back in the day, I heard a lot of people make fun of Valley girls, and they would say like a lot.
They did. That's my generation.
And so with that, we would just kind of use it.
Oh my God, it's so like totally exactly. tubular.
And we would use it non-ironically to yes. the point where it just became part of our vernacular.
Yeah, yeah.
Now people are making fun of these VSCO girls, and apparently they say like a lot or an oop or whatever. I don't know. I'm not
oop.
Yeah, oop. It's like an oop. Oof.
Like oopsie.
Oh, yeah. Oopsie.
So that might be what's next on the horizon. So now it's gonna be like, don't say or like in your public speaking classes. Probably 10
now
years.
Now it's gonna be oop.
Because some people are already using it unironically. So,
and I have my own philosophy on it.
Okay.
My philosophy on it, at least from a personal point of view, of why I feel I say the word like, is. One thing I like about Mickey's, the way she communicates, is she's 100% confident in everything that she says.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. that's why I feel like she doesn't say like.
Huh.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. And so.
I've been doing it a lot longer too, speaking in public.
Yeah. So it's the experience, you know what I'm saying? So yeah. It's the callous, you know what I'm saying, of the repetition.
Mm-hmm.
First getting into it, just being in general, outside of communication, outside of the podcast, I talked to this with my therapist. Of having an issue with being 100% confident in what I'm speaking. Now we're in a situation where I'm overanalyzing it because we have microphones in front of us.
That's
and
true.
Over on top of that, being concerned about one word.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I would say personally, and so being part of a generation that we know has mental health issues, which can lead into confidence issues.
Oh, you just got deep.
Yeah. Dang, yeah. I like this.
So yeah, this is why I think, this is just my personal opinion of why we say like and so much. Because we're not 100% confident in what
correct.
We say.
I can definitely see
correct.
That. And then the whole spotlight effect, where if you're looking out for that one word, every time that you see it, like you just saw earlier, you're just like, oh man, like whatever. And if you don't have good coping mechanisms, you start beating yourself up. It just happens. It's a cycle.
But, then I have to overly think, when in situations when I do have to use the word like, I have to think, is this a situation where I actually have to use the word like, or am I just using it?
Yeah.
So then I have to think, well, should I replace that word right now? It's like, no, that word is supposed to be there.
Well, one way I was taught, honestly, I don't even know how much I say it these days, but there are replacements. Whereas, for instance, instead of saying, well, it's like, it's as if whatever.
There it is. It's as if.
Yeah, it's as
although
if.
You can, you're, correct.
Yeah.
It's like, however, this might happen. Like, there's.
Transitional world.
Because in every English class, they're like, never use like in any of your essays.
Unless it's a simile. Unless it's a simile.
No.
This ain't a rap song. Don't use that.
Never use like. There's like, there's tons of words. There's like, they're like, there's hundreds of words.
Isn't that considered like informal?
Yeah. Well, you're not supposed to use first person. You're not supposed to say I. You're not supposed to say like. So basically, just.
So in the world of podcasting, though, to be just. Chill and laid back and not even focus on that. Isn't that a lot of the focus with podcasting anyways? I'm starting to delve into listening to more podcasts to figure out when I get back into doing podcasting, I have to figure out where my brand's going to go. I have to figure out who my audience, my demographic, focus on what is going to be the brand of it. And as I listen, I do notice whether it's highly professional, whether it's recorded in the back of a Chevy.
Yeah, people doing whatever.
It's very impersonal and it's very chill. It's like a vibe. However, to me, and it could be I'm old school, I'm in my 50s now. So knowing that it's audio only for the most part, what is going to make someone want to listen to me over someone else? What is going to make someone want to come back to me? What's going to make someone want to refer my podcast? How do I bring value to my brand?
I think
these are the things I focus on, right? And like I told you, listen to your podcast so you can critique yourself. You'll correct yourself. You'll work on yourself.
Yeah.
It helps also once you listen to your voice more.
I used to hate hearing my voice.
Me too.
And then I would do this because when I was on radio, I had to do the radio voice. And so then,
NPR.
So then when you'd hear me and I'd talk and I'd say, hi, this is Mick Angeline.
Yeah.
Afternoon Indie on V103 with Mick Angeline.
Absolutely.
And you just listen to it. And then after a while you get into it. And then after a while you get into it and then this comes out and then you're squeaking it and you didn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Like it just got to that point.
I feel like I'm going through my memory banks around there. I'm like, I really feel like I did hear you on the radio.
You might have.
Yeah, I feel like I've been in Sacramento for a little minute.
When I drive Lyft, I have people say, do you do radio podcasts? Because you sound like you have a radio voice. And I said, well, thank you. I do a lot of public speaking.
I have people tell me I shouldn't be on radio.
Oh, shit.
What?
Now, do they not want you on the radio because you're a Niner fan or just because they don't like the way you sound?
Well, I think
they're bringing that up.
No, okay, I haven't followed football in a while because I'm so mad about us going to Vegas. But didn't the Niners suck last year?
They were better than the Raiders.
I'm asking, didn't they suck last year? Because there, but there's more expected of the Niners than the Raiders anymore. So, because Niners are the ones with money. We're like the stepchild of the Bay Area.
Yeah,
and the Niners are the VSCO girls of the Bay Area.
Yeah, oh my!
But we beat the Raiders.
And I'm gonna.
No matter what you say.
Okay, that, you beat the Raiders now. But let me insight. Okay, so one of my ex girlfriends. I have three. So she lives in Palo Alto, and her brother-in-law is the entertainment coordinator for the Niners.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I would get these awesome VIP 50-yard line seats, and both years that I went to the Niners stadium. Raiders beat the Niners, so that was like the most glorious day in the world. That's incredible. Was way long ago. Like
was this before Carr came in?
This is oh my god, way before. This was 99, 2000.
That's when Gruden started.
I will say the saddest day. We'll move on from football in a second, but like the saddest day was like at the end of the Harbaugh era. After like we lost in the Super Bowl, lost in the playoffs, and everyone was leaving. Everyone was going down. Like you could just tell that the empire that the Niners built was just crumbling. And the thing that they just stuck the stake in there was like the 0-8 Raiders beat us.
Dude, I remember that day. It was beautiful. Like I was in the studio for
a candlestick. It was like,
That sucks.
You know what's the funniest thing? I had a dream last night about Harbaugh being the next coach for the Raiders for some reason. And he was yelling at Carr for some reason.
See, and this is how much I don't follow. All I know is that 2 years ago, we were doing really fucking good, and then someone broke our damn car's leg, and that was hella on purpose. That was so gangster. I'm like, you're gonna fucking break his leg? Don't make me come out there and kick your ass. I was so livid. We were so close. We had a legit chance that year.
We had a legit chance that year.
And you're gonna go and break our fucking legs like the Raider That's came out, up. Right? This is why I'm so mad. How are we gonna be Las Vegas Raiders? Like, I'm so worried they're gonna fucking bedazzle our goddamn uniforms and we're gonna have strippers for cheerleaders. Like, I'm just trying to figure this shit out.
Strippers for cheerleaders would be a Raiders thing. I'm just saying.
That's fucked up, right? It's downgrade. What you say?
Not that it would be a bad thing. I'm just saying, like, are they gonna totally take away? I don't know. I guess we're just. Well, we do have one of the worst stadiums ever. And how about those tickets? Because I had a passengers yesterday who came in from Colorado for the game tonight.
Yeah.
Right? The last Monday night game for the Raiders in Oakland. And it was cute because the husband's a Bronco fan, but the wife is a Raider fan. So I didn't... Wait. There wasn't enough in the time in the ride to find out if she's from here. And then she married him and moved there.
Yeah.
She plunked down $1,000 for two tickets at that piece of shit stadium.
How close?
But well, she said like eight, like down. But no, it doesn't. It's Oakland. Because that's like a Beyonce concert. And what made me mad was that the true blue Oakland fans who can't ever afford to go are not going to be able to go to this damn game.
Well, see, that was the problem with the Warriors. Like they that used too. To be like the loudest. When stadium. They used to be the loudest stadium. Like teams didn't even want to go there, even when the Warriors sucked. But as they won the championships and stuff, they priced out all the regular fans. Like
Was pissed.
I don't have like big time money or anything, but even like as a middle class person, I was like, oh wait, I don't even want to go to Warriors game because it's like so much. It's like okay, that's the only thing I could do for like the next 2 or 3 months because the tickets are so expensive, and that's like nosebleeds and stuff.
See, I hate that shit.
Yeah, because so much money is coming to the Bay Area, and we'll move on.
I know. We went. I just realized we went completely off tangent. And okay,
this is what happens.
So sorry.
I don't know sports at all.
This is what's great about podcasts. Like, it's
conversational.
That'll be a whole other thing if I stay as a Raider fan because I'm third generation Raider fan. And then leaving California is what's hard. Going to LA was fine, but they're leaving California. That's what's hard. And I'm old school. Like Marcus Allen was my man. You know what I mean? Like I'm old school. So
now she's like, I don't know.
I know. It's like as far as like leaving the state, because this conversation, like, because sports, a lot of people like sports. You know what I'm saying? So it's like they both like sports. You know what I'm saying? So like every time you have a sports conversation with a guest, I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. But no, but I do because my dad's from like Oakland and San Francisco. You know what I'm saying? So so we grew up as like, yo, you fuck with the Niners and the Raiders, you fuck with A's and the Giants. You know what I'm saying? But then I lived in San Francisco and I was just like, fuck that, I'm just a Raiders fan now. So I'm only a Raiders fan. So that's like I'm much for just like, yo, if you ask me, I'm a Raiders fan. But like, no, I do for that. Out of state thing is kind of like, Because it's like, and it's like, I love Oakland. So it's just like, I have such a love for Oakland. Just like, you not being in Oakland.
I know.
Means a lot. So it's
it does. Like,
Oakland's taken a lot.
Oh, yeah.
It's giving a lot of their treasured teams to San Francisco, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. All right, so now moving on.
Yeah, moving on now.
What would you like to talk about now?
So,
what do you think about Antonio Brown leaving the Raiders now?
No. We don't talk about that.
So what? Sorry, I'm getting over a fever. Trying not to cough.
What's happening to us?
Yeah, no,
I'm all the way back here.
This will be the last podcast. No. that'd be horrible. So what is like your like the Mickey origin story? Like, are you like born in Sac? Or are you from Sac? When did you get to Sac? Or, you know, be this being like Sac vibes?
Yeah,
you know
I'm
what
curious
saying?
About that.
I have lived in Sacramento for 20 years, but I am from Fairfield.
Okay. Okay. California, baby.
So I moved here in 99.
Okay.
So literally, it's been 20 years.
Literally in the. How has Sacramento changed in the 2000s?
Oh my gosh. So honestly, too, my move to Sacramento, it was right after I came out, because I grew up straight, married, had a kid, the natural way, didn't buy it on Amazon, and birthed the child, and then came out. So my move to Sacramento was a lot of focus on that, besides it was for a job also, and to raise our kid together, because what happened was, what I had it was, my then... ex-husband, we both were living in Vacaville. I get a job in the Bay Area, and then months later he gets a job here working for Intel. I'm working for an international law firm. And now daycare is raising our kid, and our kid's 4 going on 5. We have to make this decision as parents. We're gonna go, so what do we do with this? Because next year she needs to be in kindergarten.
Yeah.
What do we do? So we just made the decision. I said, well, your job is better. I can get a job anywhere. His job was better. He's working for Intel, right? My job, I just was, I was a receptionist, a legal secretary, so to speak, at a law firm. I'm like, I'll move up here. I'll find a job up. I had friends here already. So I'm like, I have somewhere I can stay. I'll get a job here. Can you find somewhere yet? And we made the decision to move here for our kid, which kept me here. She's graduated from high school like 2 or 3 years ago. But then I got into the music scene.
Yeah.
I discovered the music scene through an all-girl heavy metal rock band. Aurora. Shout out to my girls, Aurora.
Ooh.
2007.
Yeah, yeah. I think they took classes at, with Ari. Yeah.
This is way back, though.
Yeah, no, I seen their marketing plan. It was fucking amazing.
There you go. Way back, though.
Yeah.
And so I learned about the music scene here in Sac. And I got excited about staying.
Yeah.
And that's what right? Because I didn't know what I wanted to do. Like once I knew my kid, my whole goal was is once she was graduated, I was going to figure out what my next plan was. Because I needed to stay stable. We were staying stable for our kid. But I discovered music in 2007 here, stayed. And then through there, discovered the V103 thing. But interestingly, when we go back to like the growth of Sacramento and the music scene here, once the gentrification started in 2015, I saw it nosediving about 2014, and I don't know if it had to do with the rise of popularity with Facebook and Instagram, and people can stream things and supporting local music. I don't know, it was really weird. There was this flux of amazing support to local music, and somewhere between 2014 and 2016 it started to taper off a bit, but then a lot of your smaller venues were being
closed down
because leases were doubling and tripling, and your mom and pop places couldn't afford that.
Wow.
Because of the influx of the Bay Area and San Jose people moving up here, buying property. Because you discover, I mean, as a Lyft driver, I hear and talk to a lot of people. We have Bay Area people plunking cash down over the asking price and driving people from Sacramento out of Sacramento. They can't afford to live here anymore. And that happens with, and you know, so for the music scene, it was harder because there were less places for them to go, especially when you have under 21-year-olds. And the only two places they could go were the Boardwalk and, at the time, Ace of Spades. Yeah. Before it became Live Nation, which it's now all ages.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Boardwalk was the staple since the 90s. That was the place you went, and they booked bigger bands. Once Ace of Spades took over, the Boardwalk started to die down a bit, but it still was at least an all ages place, and even that place is struggling. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
I just.
Dang, okay, because that's one thing I've definitely noticed is, like, just being, like, just a performer on two different aspects, you know what I'm saying? Like, in the hip-hop world and in, the, like, the rock world, it's just, like, I feel like there's definitely 100% not enough, like, venues for smaller acts. So I thought it was always that way. I didn't know that there was, that at one point there was more venues for people to play at, and those places shut down.
Yeah. In fact, you all know, what's it called? Damn it, Coin Up. That used to be Maryland's on Coin K. Up.
Yeah.
That was used to be a local venue.
What?
V103, we used to book Wednesday nights there.
Wow. Oh, before it was K Up? Before it was Coin Up?
They did live band karaoke there on the weekends.
Damn. Holy crap.
They did live band karaoke like it was the college hangout. They did live band karaoke. They had beer pong contests. They did the shot chairs were out there, I think.
Yeah.
You know, the dentist chairs, and they pour the alcohol. Mm-hmm. It was a pretty hopping music venue for years. Damn. And now it's a Coin Up. Oh my gosh, 2014? 2015?
That's when Coin Up.
Whenever Coin Up took over. And then the Assembly used to be right next to Pizza Rock.
Yeah.
Homeboy, I forgot his name. I'm flaking. He's the one who owned Ace before Live Nation took it over.
What the fuck is his name? Live Nation.
He had Assembly for a while, which was a pretty cool in between venue. It held roughly 500 to 600 people, and it was a theater before that, so it was already built for sound. Like, your reception on your phone was shitty, but man, the music was dope. And they had the bar above it. To the back was the VIP with like white leather couches and shit. Yeah, and then I've he sold that. Venues. I'm telling you, there were a lot of... Doghouse Saloon was a big one.
Never heard of that one either.
Yeah, I mean, that
of
one course,
I'm young, stuff. But I'm like, yo, it's just like...
Because you're young. Yeah, we're talking 90s, 2000. There were so many places to check out live music.
Ew.
Now, mind you, Sacramento is really known for the longest time, rock, hard rock, and acoustic.
Yeah.
It wasn't as big of a place. At one point, there was a jazz place.
Yeah.
Believe it or not. At one point, there was a club where you could learn... what was it? Oh, what's the dance step? I'm trying to think of. It was dance salsa? Club. No. Yeah. That's still around.
Ballroom.
Yeah. Not even ballroom. The fun one. The fun one. You know.
Lindy swing.
Yes, like that kind of.
Lindy swing. Yeah.
It was called the fishbowl, I think.
Yeah.
I'm really going back, but there was.
The dance was called the fishbowl.
The dance place.
Oh,
I think I have heard of
it. It was like the '50s style dancing stuff.
Yeah.
Lindy swing is freaking.
Yeah. Okay. Crazy. I know what you're talking about. I've seen it in my head now. Okay.
There were a lot of places in Sacramento that had that stuff, but then
a lot of variety.
But once money took over.
Yeah.
And you know, gentrification took over.
Yeah.
And now it's all about, we went from City of Trees to Farm to Fork.
Yeah,
now it's about your fusion restaurants and your microbreweries.
Yeah.
Now the explosion of art is awesome. The wide open walls, like at least they're doing that.
Yeah.
But music?
Yeah.
It's making it harder and harder.
Yeah.
For your up and coming artists, the ones that want to remain indie and don't want to sign to like a big fat label, like, even though that's dying out, you know.
Yeah.
We've discussed that on Eric's panels and whatnot, but
it's
hard.
Yeah, it's tough because it's like you don't want to keep playing the same venue. Like, yo, I got a show at this venue again. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, yo, thank you for having... Like, it's like, you know, and it's like, of course, like, bless you. It's like, thank you for letting us be here. But it's just like, I don't want to... Choice between, like, man, okay, if I want to do a show in Sac, I got three options. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's... I mean, that's like pigeonholing it, but it's just like, that's how it kind of, like, feels sometimes. Like,
that's why you don't see a lot of big names coming to Sacramento, because the venue choice is...
No, okay, now...
If they do, it's Live Nation.
Yeah, it's the Ace of Spades.
Because
because there is artists coming to Ace of Spades that were not coming here.
But you know what's missing?
What? Local artists.
But you know what's missing? When Live Nation took over? Not a lot of local artists are given an opportunity to open for these artists.
No, they're not.
That
100%.
Was the difference. Because that makes a difference, right? Yeah. They're doing better, but you know what has grown, which I'm really happy for, is Concerts in the Park.
Yeah.
They really have expanded their genre, and they trade it out so it isn't the same seven artists you're seeing every year. Like, some of them will come back, but they open up to more because they want you to see. Sacramento is chocked full of talent. It just isn't a place to make money doing it. Now, I'll be honest, full disclosure, I have not been out in the local scene for a couple of years, besides the fact that my own personal life has taken a severe nosedive, and I've just withdrawn and had to do self-healing. I work now with the Women's International Music Network, so a lot of my
work—awesome.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. So a lot of my work focuses on women in the industry, but I'm focused on women everywhere, not just Sacramento, but the world. Mm-hmm. Thus, I haven't been able to go out and support. I try to follow with my friends that are still in music, that I'm still friends with, to see what's out there, what are the venues. And I only hear of like 4 or 5 that pop up that people say that they're at.
Yeah.
Blue Lamp is a big one. I'm glad they're still around. They're small. They're independent. They support a lot of artists you might not even know. So you can go there and just have a drink and check out an artist who probably has been around for a long time and you didn't know it. You get to vibe with them. You get to talk with them afterwards. I love that interaction that happens. Mm-hmm. And that's how artists collaborate with one another. Figure out how to get on someone else's bill. Hey, can I tour with you? Let's tour together.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like that isn't as prominent. And I don't know if it's the dawn of artists being able to record their own stuff and do a lot of mixing. There's a lot of solo artists that work with just a guitar and 6 pedals.
Yeah, yeah.
And they loop everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which means bands are no longer as important as they were 10, 15 years ago.
Bands.
Right?
Yeah, no.
You're an artist. Who's the mixer here? Who's the producer?
So to give like a little like background of like what we kind of do like when we're not podcasting or like that. He's a producer, like audio engineer.
Yeah.
I'm a rapper and I do my own thing, but I'm also a drummer in a band called Yo and the Electric.
And the what?
A band called Yo and the Electric.
Okay, I'm gonna have to follow you.
Yeah. They're super dope. And Wes is like a business guy.
Yeah,
you're a what guy?
I'm just white.
He's white.
Wait. I've got musical talent. Yeah. He'd be set. My rap debut's coming out. Eventually.
What?
Oh, yeah. We're just
okay, before we get
we'll
carried away,
have you listen to
my question was going to be is, as artists, are you trying to perform live or do you prefer to just record things and put it out to stream?
I don't know. I'm always trying to perform live. I love performing live. Yeah. But I also...
Is it a struggle? In Sacramento.
Yes, to find, in my experience, like, yes, you know what I'm saying? Like, in the thing of talking about, like, playing at the same venues, and if you want to get money, like, I feel like there is more money outside of, venues outside of Sac are probably going to give you a little bit more money.
They're going to give you a lot more money. What do you think I drive Lyft at in the Bay Area, not here?
Yeah, so keeping it real with that, so that's, like, the thing is just, like, as a Sac artist, I feel like you want to be a Sac artist and be like, yo, like, I'm out here doing it for my town. But it's just like when the town financially, I feel like can't support you, I feel like unless you're like fucking Hobo Johnson or whatever the fuck, then...
But even like Hobo Johnson and stuff, like if you do somehow get to the point where you're blowing up in Sacramento, you have to go somewhere else.
You do. Well, I mean, you have to leave the city.
I mean, that's 100%. But I'm saying as far as even getting to that point, doing it in Sacramento, I feel like it's a little bit of a challenge. Because, like, say if we're in San Francisco, right? Say if we're a ground level San Francisco. I can go to do a bar over here, a bar over here. I can go to Berkeley. I can go to Oakland.
There's so many
venues. You know what I'm saying?
Emeryville.
Like, especially if you're small, especially. You're only going to pack in with 25, 50, up to 100. You know what I'm saying? So you're looking for venues to take 200 or less. You can find so many more in San Francisco.
Yes.
And feel me? So it's like in San Francisco, there's not like bar after bar after bar after bar that just has... You know, that just has
me.
In Sacramento.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so it's just like the opportunities of those places. So it's just like, okay, so let's say there's only like 10 places to play, right? Those places are going to have then you got to look at how many bands are in Sacramento. They're going to have someone fill that Saturday night spot, Friday night spot. There's way more bands, musical talent, than there are, like I said, venues to make things work. So it's like, you may get that spot. You can get that spot once every 2 months, once every 3 months.
Imbalance. Well, you know what else it is too? Is you have to know who you're marketing to, because Sacramento is really big on a lot of the one and duo acts that do at restaurants.
Yeah.
More. Mm-hmm. Anymore, I've noticed, because when I see friends,
you're a songwriter, you gonna get the money.
Yes, when I see friends posting that they're performing at like the Delta, they're performing at different restaurants, it's because it's just them or two people sitting there with a guitar with some pedals. Very few is it full on bands. That's why I asked you if you're in a band. Yeah. Is the struggle as a single rapper even in Sacramento? Are there venues for hip hop?
Yeah, a couple. You can do hip hop at Silver Orange. You can do hip hop at Classy Hippie.
Okay.
Old Ironsides might fuck with you.
Yeah, except
but
are they
you,
closed.
But yeah, but you not. Some venues, like, bro, like...
What are
I thought... Oh, sold. The owner sold it. No, it's... Look it up.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought I saw it somewhere on Facebook.
But either way, so, like, yes, you're not, like, yo, as a hip-hop artist in Sacramento, it'd be like... Like, some venues, like, as soon as you do, like, be like, we don't even do hip-hop.
See?
I'd be like, yeah. What?
And
like,
you know what they try to say is there are people that say because fights break out.
Yeah. And yeah. That, hey, that used to be a thing. That used to be a thing when Sacramento rap, when all it was is gangster rap and shit like that. Like, yo, like at one point, like, I forget his name, but the highest Sacramento rap, like, rapper, like, he's in jail right now. Like, so it's just like there were like a bunch of gangbanger.
Like CeeLo or something.
Yeah, so it's like there were a bunch of like gangbanger rappers before, but it's like, bro, we in a different generation. Like, bro, like we ain't all out here gangbanging and shit like that. So it's just like,
yeah, but but it's also Sacramento.
Yeah,
it's Sacramento, right. They'll stick to one thing.
That's the shit that gets me hot, because it's like, yo, it's like, because if that is your premise, if you don't want to book a hip hop show because you think there's fights, I'm just like, that tells me, I'm like, bro, you're either like, one, just off that dumb, or you didn't take the 2 minutes to listen to, or I mean the 5 minutes, whatever, to listen to the 3 tracks I've seen. Because if you listen to, especially I feel like my 3 songs, you're like, this guy ain't. It's just not happening with this guy's music.
Correct. So, you nailed it right there. Mm-hmm. Most, you know, this could be an age-old thing. I'm not sure if this is now, but when I was booking, because I book shows.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've worked with artists. And when I did it, I definitely took people would email me. They would send me the links to their Reverb Nation. That was a thing back then.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I took the time to listen. And I looked up their Facebook and their Instagram and I, you know, to see where are their followers?
Yeah.
Are they engaged? What other shows have they done?
Yeah.
Are they going to, you know, is there an audience here? I mean, half of it is, do they already have an audience here? And the other half was, is, are they going to be able to have more followers now?
You were doing your job.
I was doing my job.
Yeah.
Not realizing I was one of the only few doing my job. Because as I talk with artists and I'm on the radio, I'm doing my thing, I'm learning not everyone does that.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. For instance, like the big old huge, and I know we're just going off on complete tangents here and I apologize.
Hey, no, you're gonna apologize.
When, what was his name? Adam Calhoun, that it's called Hick Hop, which is country rap.
Oh.
That's an actual genre.
It is.
Goldfields booked him the same weekend of Sacramento's Pride.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I didn't even. Year? Yes.
Oh, and wait,
supposedly,
I think I've heard about
supposedly,
two days sold out.
Yeah, and supposedly part of his shtick is he does homophobic slurs in his raps.
Mm.
But I don't think he's specific to. I think it's. I don't listen to his stuff, so I'm not sure if he's full on racist, homophobic, or he does it for click. Value.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Some people something. Like the attention.
Yeah.
But there were some artists here in Sacramento who saw that, were like, are you even thinking? There was enough of a stink, he was canceled.
Yeah.
Mm.
So, but what happens is you've got a venue person who isn't even studying who he's not paying attention to the trending of what's going on with the artist. And I don't know if that's a Sacramento thing or if it's everywhere.
Yeah.
That's something I paid attention to when I booked artists,
yeah. Yeah.
You know, and tried to make it diverse and make it so that when you came to the bar, because a lot of times you might just come to that bar because it's your regular bar, but now you see this artist or these artists and you're really excited about these artists. You talk to them afterwards, you have a few drinks, you buy some CDs, you have a new fan. That was always the goal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? You as an artist would appreciate
yeah.
that.
No, that's dope.
We work together as a team.
Yeah.
No. Because now it's like if I have to come around and book you, I mean, I let me chip my little own horn here.
Yeah.
I actually booked bands at Faces Nightclub.
Yeah.
Somehow wow. This is what happens when you do what you do and your reputation gets out there. I was approached. They wanted to try something new. This was 2015. They wanted to do live music on Wednesday nights. And word got back to people that I know at the bar, because that's the bar that I came out to and has been going to since 97.
Yeah.
We're like, hey, let's get Mickey. She books bands. And I booked successfully bands for 8 months solid.
Yeah.
4 nights a month.
Yeah.
And they were up on a marquee. They actually got paid really well compared to other artists.
I've heard Faces, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like this, because yeah. A lot of times you have to sell tickets to make money, and then if you're lucky, you made $50.
Yeah, Sacramento be on that hard.
This is 2015, and the artist got paid $400 for 2 hours, 2 45-minute sets, which is not bad.
Not
right?
Damn.
And then I was able to book 4 live acts and a nationally famous lesbian comedian at Rainbow Festival that year.
Which one?
Cinder Balls. Oh. She's now my friend. We're now good friends. Lesbian, queer, but
I just, can you? Yo. I'm just getting so mad because it's like just my heart. People just like aren't doing their job. You know what I'm saying?
But it's about relationships. Yeah. I cared.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. it is my reputation at stake.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of work that I did. So anything that I was going to do, it was going to benefit everyone all around, right? Yeah. And I look back at that and I was like, fuck, that was an awesome time. It was hard work. Yeah. It was fun. I mean, I had On Off, was it the third week? And they're an Irish rock band. Mm. That was so much fun. We all rocked out in the swimming pool afterwards. And they had mermaids in the pool then too. So I made friends with Amy, who's a professional mermaid. Her and I became really good friends. And I
Dive bar?
She did there for a little bit, but she was her own Lighthouse Mermaids was her company. And because they would do parties and they would talk to about water conservation, and they did like kid birthday parties, and they would do other things. And so Faces hired them to swim in the pool on Wednesday night. So we had mermaids and live music. We even made our own little ad video. But the thing being is, it was successful because I cared enough to do my job, and I booked great artists that were good variety that fit in the shtick of, well, this is why I was excited, because I could book non-rock bands. Even though I did book a couple of rock bands, there was now a venue for experimental and pop and R&B. And I did a couple of cover bands too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That mostly Sacramento was doing hard rock, metal, and singer-songwriter.
Yeah. That's, yeah.
So you that may be
hard rock singer-songwriter all day in Sacramento. It's like,
is it still?
Yeah, like, it's like, even, like, this is, like, no hate, too, you know what I'm saying? It's, like, it's just, I used to do sound at Silver Orange, and I didn't know how alive the rock scene is in Sacramento. You even have, like, 15-year-olds who are like, about the rock, and, like, the style of rock that they do. I look at them, I'm like, you're 15 years old. Like, that was popular before you were born, or when you were like 5 years old, 3 years old, like, how did you get introduced to it and for it to be taking up your life so much? But at the same time, I didn't grow up with streaming services, so that's something I can't fathom that. So
crazy.
I would say there's a lot of songwriting, I guess, showcases in Sacramento and Roseville specifically.
Right, because you live there.
I live there, and also in Old Roseville, which is 10 minutes away. Fig Tree. Yeah. The Fig Tree. The Fig Tree is this coffee and tea place that I think every night or almost every Wednesday night they have a lot of songwriters come in. They have probably regulars are.
Is it like an open mic?
It's kind of an open mic. Like you. I think it's scheduled. It's scheduled like you're going to be performing on that night.
Okay.
But I guess, based on the songwriters, they decide who's going on first and so.
Okay.
But there's also Songwriter Circle, which is in Sacramento. It's a specific club of all these songwriters around the area that come together and they help each other out with their...
I need to check that out.
Yeah.
Because I can find new women to write about on the women.
Because we had a guest, actually, Mona V. She's amazing guitarist. You've heard of her. So yeah, she's one of the main people that is on Songwriter Circle.
Yeah, I do see her on that. I want to check that out as well, because I don't know if it's
It's not primarily like pop or folk.
Okay.
Sometimes I'd be curious
if rappers are welcome. So
they'll let you in, of course, I think.
Because like, songwriting. No, you can't.
Then again, I don't know. It's Roseville.
That too.
Yeah.
There really aren't black people in Roseville.
No, it's not too loud.
Yeah. There was this horrible game that I played with. I shouldn't say played. It was like not even a horrible game. I take that all back. It was more of a. The focus came for me to say, someone had said to me, there are no black people in Roseville. Like, yeah, there are. And I made it a point to try and find them, and I couldn't. And if I did, I got excited, but I thought, oh, wait, they work here. Maybe they don't live here.
Yeah.
Right? I go into a grocery store or something, and maybe they just, and it's like, it's a company where maybe that was the opening and they transfer them.
Yeah.
And then I even remember as a driver for Lyft, which I do, of course, a passenger, an older man who had moved there maybe a year ago, and he had said we had the conversation. He opened it up and how he feels like he's the only one there.
He's like the only black person.
And this man is in his 50s.
Yeah,
dang.
I know. So that's a good question. Is hip hop? I say we try that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's go out and support you. You do some hip hop.
Yeah, I'm down.
Let's do it.
I'm down too.
You just have to do a couple spaces and just be like,
just bring the whole squad of
songs. As long as we got five people clapping, they'll be like,
People clapping and stuff.
I went to Folsom one time and
Folsom.
I don't even know why I went out there one time. As soon as I went out, I just drove up. I was just like, yo, open mic, Folsom. And I drove up. I was like, I was driving up, like, why am I going to Folsom right now? I mean, then I
why started, are you going to Folsom yeah, right now?
And then I got there and I was, why am I here right now?
Yeah.
I'm going to head out.
But Abe, there is two, nobody liked it. No, I'm not nobody liked it, but nobody really appreciated it. You know what I'm saying? I even saw some younger people like who got there and I'm like, okay, younger people, they're going to like my shit. They're not like my shit. There was these two older white people who were dancing through my whole set, and they were like, "Oh, yo, you dope! You should check out this other place." So,
at least they had like some people come to you and say you were dope.
Yeah, yeah. So that just fucked me up.
It wasn't. That was good. That,
okay, next question.
Girls program. What girls program? That's not a question. That's more of a statement.
That's just a pause.
Oh yeah,
girls.
Next question, girls.
Girl, yes, I just feel like I said it out of order. I feel like I'm dyslexic sometimes. The Girls Rock program.
Oh, Girls Rock Sacramento.
Girls Rock Sacramento.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that and how you linked up with them?
Tell us about Girls Rock Sacramento and how y'all won the Sammy over us.
Wait, over who?
Wes.
As in Sac Vibes?
Yes. Wes wanted to win a Sammy last year for his birthday. But we weren't nominated. We had to write in. So it was like...
Yeah, so we did a whole, like, write-in campaign where we just had everyone write in Sac Vibes. Thought it was going to work. Obviously didn't, but...
Well, then you clearly didn't do your homework on Girls Rock Sacramento to know why we beat you.
No. Well, I actually have a very... I know, but I won't hear
it. Number one, it's not mine. I'm a volunteer.
Yeah.
It is the baby hybrid Larissa Brisky.
Who's that?
Oh, she's an amazing, amazing person in Sacramento. She has done music for years. She's been in bands. She's traveled. And then after doing the whole band circuit, famously, settled in Sacramento, teaching vocals.
Nice.
She worked with Skips Music and did the Stairway to Stardom program. She was the program director for many years.
Nice.
So she's had the practice with that.
Yeah.
Her husband Willie's a phenomenal guitarist and singer. They sing together as a couple all the time, and the harmonies together are just brilliant. So Girls Rock Sacramento is actually part of the Girls Rock Camp Alliance, which started in 2001 in Oregon. And I remember being excited the first time I saw it because I attended my first NAMM convention, or my second NAMM convention in 2013. And that was when the She Rock Awards, it was their first one. And I learned who the Women's International Music Network was. And I went, it was a breakfast. And I sat at a table with two other women that were part of a girls' camp from San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Learned about it, and I thought, oh my God, this would be so great if Sacramento did it. And then Larissa, she opened it with a couple of other people, and it launched in 2016. And it's the most amazing camp because what it does is, it basically is a safe place for girls, those who identify as girls, non-binary, non-gender conforming, to come to a safe space and learn about inclusivity and social justice through music education. It's a week-long camp. And what's cool is they get together, they're put in a band, often with girls they don't know.
Right.
They get this is what's so dope about it. And if you haven't seen the video, check it out, like the one that I just posted. But they get an individual coach to teach them about whatever it is they're learning, singing, playing bass, playing drums. And then they also get a band coach because they're going to write an original song and perform it. They have days in a camp at 6 hours each day on top of other workshops that they do.
Oh, shit.
And then at the end of the week, they perform it at Ace of Spades. Live Nation hosts is one of the sponsors of Girls Rock. And they get to perform it on stage. They get techs. They have guitar, bass, and drum techs. And on a stage with all the equipment, they come up with a band name. They create their band merch. Mm-hmm.
That's... I'm going this next year.
So,
when I did my research, I was like,
I
see what
it is. Yeah. You're just being an asshole. I was so thrilled to be a part of it. I teach the self-defense, self-awareness, because my background is my family's school, Tony Ramos Kajukembo, which is based out of Fairfield. It started in San Francisco in 1960, moved to Fairfield in 1962, which is where I'm from. It's my uncle's school. And I've been training off and on since I was six.
Okay.
And then in the 90s, I became an assistant instructor. And so to have an opportunity to teach basic self-awareness and self-defense to the young girls, because I know it's 2019.
It's still crucial.
Girls still have to worry about being a victim. And I teach them, my whole philosophy is learn to be safe over being polite.
Yeah.
I still deal with that. As a female driver, I'll get that, I call it the rapey guy who insists I need to give him my phone number because he feels we vibed and I want to ask you out. guys aren't always aware. None of you in this room, obviously, I can feel the vibe. You're wonderful men. Mm-hmm. The women that aren't wonderful are the ones using that male masculine toxicity to just get what they want. So for me, it's a matter of teaching them just to be aware of their surroundings and just to be smart about it.
Yeah.
Right? And to be comfortable in this space. Because if you're going to be having to defend yourself physically, you have to be comfortable being in someone in your space. Because in this day and age, a lot of people, men and women, are not comfortable with someone being in the space. Why? Mm-hmm. We're on social media so much. Yeah. That physical interaction is not there. To mm-hmm. feel comfortable with someone, if they approach and you feel that negative energy, what do you do with it? Do you just shut down and let them have their way, or do you fight back?
Yeah.
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 So what do you feel is like, it's like, how do you say, because that's a big challenge, I feel like. I mean, maybe it's because I'm a man, whatever, but that's almost like, I feel like a mentality shift in someone to almost, how you say, not step up the confidence, but just be comfortable in everything. Like martial arts, I haven't done too much martial arts, but to me, like, I do respect like the discipline of it, and I feel mm-hmm. like it does, I don't know how to say it, but almost like shift the mind. So how do you go about that? Like, how do you feel like, what's a crucial element when you go about that?
Teaching it or learning it?
Teaching it.
It depends on your audience, right?
Okay.
So I've been learning it for a long time. It's a part of me.
Yeah.
And it has changed. The scope of martial arts and how people learn it and the reason they learn it is different. For example, schools now have lockdown drills where they learn what to do if there's a shooter in the school. That was never mm-hmm. a situation for me going to school.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Times change. So do you teach a child martial arts if a young kid's running around with an AK-47 shooting up the school? Will that help him or her?
Yeah.
There are defenses against it, but the thing is martial art, like any other practice, has to be repetitive. You can't just take one or two classes and be an expert.
Yeah.
I've had it instilled with me for so many years.
Yeah.
I would know what to do if someone bust into this room right now and tried to attack me.
Yeah.
But I've been doing it since I was a kid.
Yeah.
Someone who's just taking a couple of weeks of it, a couple of months of it, probably won't know. So I have to go from that mindset, right? If I'm teaching these young girls, I only have 40 minutes with them.
Mm-hmm.
I always ask the first question, how many here have taken martial arts before? I get a scope.
Mm-hmm.
Majority of them usually don't raise their hand. And then I go in to say, this is about protecting yourself. This is, and sometimes running is the best defense.
Mm-hmm.
I tell them speaking up is what's most important. Understanding that your value is more important. And do not be scared to speak up for fear that something bad will happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
That's the key. We often don't speak up because we fear something bad will happen to us. But this is stuff men doesn't have to worry about. Show of hands in this room, how many of you, if you've ever moved into an apartment complex, wanted to live on the second or third floor so that you don't have to worry about somebody breaking into your window and raping you? Show of hands. How many of you, when you're walking to your car, have your keys ready because someone might jump you and grab your bags as you get into your car? See, guys never have to worry about that.
Yeah.
Like, girls have to worry.
Yeah.
How often it happens when you hear about it in the news, it usually happens to a female and not a male.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you do, I'm sorry that you do. You started to raise your hand. Were you being serious?
Yeah. No.
Okay. You worry about being attacked when you go to your car?
Yeah, because that's happened to me twice in the past.
Whoa, okay. Really?
And, I mean, it wasn't random. It was, it's a whole long story of past, but, like, basically, this guy...
Were you set up?
Yeah. This guy thought I did something, but I didn't do.
One of those things.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
shit.
And I got jumped right, like, while I was walking to my car.
Okay.
And just... beat the living hell out of.
Yeah,
and that's a scary thing in itself.
Yeah, that'll fuck me up too.
Yeah.
That's a scary thing in itself.
So, yeah, like...
So that's a trigger for you, because it happened in the past.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, yeah.
Okay, so sorry that happened. But, you know, coming from that aspect, so now I know, this is how I observe, as an instructor, because of the training I had at Tony Ramos Coach Gumbo with my instructor, Grandmaster David Amicucci, I had 30 minutes, I had 28 students.
Yeah.
I need to keep them in line, keep them focused, have them active, and take something away from that class.
Yeah.
That's all about being a good instructor.
Yeah.
Right? So we went over a couple of drills. I did exercises for them to get them all loosened up, did a couple of drills, and then did some verbal Q&A back and forth, and then we were done. Now, when I'm teaching classes, if you're taking it and you want to stay in it, that's something totally different.
Right.
But would you use that today? That's a very good question. I just brought up the thing about lockdown drills.
Oh, yeah.
So, and people huffing and puffing on the internet, and wanting to attack, when would that be used? That's a very good question. You tell me. Give me a scenario where you would be that you think you would have to use it.
Martial arts?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, because in right now, the only situation I could think of would be at a bar where someone's too drunk and is acting a fool.
Perfect.
But, yeah, but luckily, I'm... The reason my stutter is because I feel like I've been blessed, luckily, so far.
Yes,
and that I'm 20, like, I'm about to turn 27, and I've never been in a fight in my life. But at the same time, I also feel at a disadvantage. Whereas it's like, if I ever do get in a fight, I feel like 9 out of 10 people, these are some statistics I'm pulling out of my ass, as always. I'm a professional bullshit statistic maker. but I feel like 9 out of 10, maybe not Nico, but you know what I'm saying, but at least 8 out of 10 people have been in a fight before. And so I feel if I get in a fight, maybe I'm going off bat, the other person has more experience.
Except for you are doing yourself a favor and you're not putting yourself in a situation where you need to be in a fight.
Yeah. That's one thing I feel like I've done good at, is not putting myself in situations where people be like, I'm going to whoop your ass.
Mm-hmm. You know?
I got challenged one time in the 4th grade and he never showed up. So I was like, fuck it.
Yeah.
This guy wanted to fight me because he thought I stole his pencil. And I was like, we could meet after school. Because my friend had already beat his ass a couple times. So I was just like, you can't be that hard, bro. Like, you seem like a good first fight. And so...
first fight. You're going to break me into this.
Yeah, right. He never showed up. And I was just like, all right. And so I seen him the next day. He was just like, hey, man, I had like... I forget, he had like science club after school. And then his mom picked him up. He was like, I just couldn't do it, bruh. And I was just like, well, I mean, fuck it. Like, that was my opportunity. Like, we're not going to fight no more.
And so, that was school. And that was a totally different vibe, right? The bar thing is probably the most realistic, to be honest. Because you will get that person who's had too much to drink. And then they just, for some reason, they get it in their head that they're going to confront you about something. Yeah. And all that is knowing the difference of the importance of escalation and de-escalation of force. I'll give you an example. I had to use it. I was an assistant manager for Spirit Halloween. Mm.
Mm.
2014.
That was a good Halloween.
That was a good Halloween. I think. I'll wait. Bet, yeah, 2000, that was a good one. Maybe 2013. No.
Reese's Pieces that year?
Reese's Pieces.
Actually, take it back. 2013.
I own Reese's Pieces, man.
You're so funny. 2013 was, because what Spirit Halloweens do is they take over existing buildings that have yet to have a business in it. Yeah. So it's a pop-up. Yeah. Right? It's they're there for 3 months.
I love the concept.
Correct. It's very brilliant.
Yeah.
The one that I happened to work at was in where the old Osh building is. It's now a Crunch Fitness, so it's huge.
Oh, shit.
Greenback and San Juan?
Yeah.
Okay, it was an old Osh, Orchard Supply Hardware. Huge.
I never seen one that big.
Oh, yeah. Okay, now keep in mind, all your Spirit Halloweens do not have cameras because that's just too expensive. But depending on the neighborhood, they will have plainclothes security there.
Mm.
Okay? This one did because it's where it's at.
Yeah.
We had a big dude who was a plainclothes. He'd walk around. He knew what to look for. Because you'll get the... And it's usually women, unfortunately, right? It's not usually men that do this. But they'll come in with an empty, heavy bag and then they'll leave and it'll be packed.
Mm.
Right? So... Yeah, I got into a confrontation.
Yeah.
Because I'm assistant manager, I'm there in the day. The main manager is always the one who closes.
Yeah.
So it's in between the shifts are about to switch off. And I'm at a register. I hear to my left, my plainclothes security guy and the regional, he's the one that travels to all of them, making sure we have our inventory, bringing it, whatnot. They're confronting two young girls.
Mm-hmm.
And I turn my head and it's, what's in your bag? Show us what's in your bag. We've seen you put stuff in your bag. Crud. So now I look at the main manager. I said, call the police.
Yeah.
And I had to tell the people in line, just a moment. And it's busy. This must have been like, was like 3:30, 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
I go to the door and it's the thumb lock doors because they're the doors that you flip it and they're censored to where they double open.
Okay.
So I go in, I shut off the automatic, I thumb it, and now we're waiting because we're like, we got you.
Yeah.
And the thing is people who are professional thieves know that you can't touch them and you can't go through their bag.
Yeah.
If you can't prove that they put it in there, The people that work for us know this. So they're constantly, and they won't let them go around the corner because they know that if they can go around the corner and ditch it, you didn't catch them. Yeah. You've got nothing on them. A company like Spirit Halloween is not going to pursue it.
Yeah.
But we've got them. We're not letting them. They're trying to find other ways to get out. Now there's a crowd that has developed outside of the store who is trying to come in. There's the crowd inside the store that wants to leave. People's got their phones up. They're recording. Yeah. I'm standing by the door. They're pushing past these guys because they know the guys won't touch them.
Yeah.
They're trying, and it's two young girls.
Yeah.
She tries to reach past me and scratched my arm.
Yeah.
I was like, motherfucker.
Yeah.
But I'm still standing there. And then she tried, and then I think she went to grab me and I took her hand, put it in a wrist lock, then let her go.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, okay, that's all you did. You have to figure out, am I going to beat the shit out of her because she grabbed my shirt? No, I still have my Spirit Halloween apron on. The last straw was she tried to reach through and around to unlock it and hit me in the head.
Mm-hmm.
I was done. That was three.
Yeah.
Done. And so what I do is, as quick, and this happens so fast because I know what I'm doing, I literally snaked around behind her, got her in a full Nelson. And this, I'm describing it a lot slower than it happened.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's the way that the layout is, it's the cement block wall and then the window. And she rears up on me. She tries to bite. I reach under and get under her neck. She kicks back. My head had hit the cement, but I'm still going down. We apparently blew the double doors off of their hinges as we're coming down.
Yeah.
And I snaked my legs up and around and split her out, cranking on her neck as we're going back. And it's her cousin going, "You're killing my cousin, get off of her." And she's like smacking on me and I won't let up.
Yeah.
And I know, well, no, actually I left something out. She did say, "Here," and dumped it in front of us. So she was busted.
Mm.
She had like six costumes in her bag.
Dang.
Because she was panicked. But when she hit me that third time, it was over. And so I held on for maybe a couple of minutes before I let her go. And she was like all out of breath. And I'm like, "You're crazy." And then they had called the police. So when apparently my boss had said, "Oh shit, you better hurry up and get here now. They're fighting." Like, you know, cause they saw us wrapped up. And I knew that that was the only thing I could do and not get arrested in that split second decision. I wasn't going to throw punches at her. I wasn't going to try to stick her. If she had a weapon, I would have disarmed her. Right.
Yeah.
And then I had, you know, it happened like that, though. I'm describing it a lot slower
light
than it.
Light speed almost.
Yes.
Yeah.
And only because of my training for so many years, it was second nature. Would you know to do that?
Hell no.
Right.
You wouldn't start to throw punches.
Because my whole goal was to subdue her.
Yeah.
That's why I did the whole reverse angle choking out thing versus try to go toe to toe. I'm not a fighter. Yeah. I'm just trying to get her to stop.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I had the fire department showed up, and I said, "Please check my head because I'm so riled right now. I might have a concussion," which I ended up with a mild concussion. I go, "Is there any, like, did I cut myself? Like, I hit my head?" Yeah. Like, you know, all that.
Just to correct what you'd say, because I take this serious. I would never punch her. I don't hit women.
That's right.
I mean, if you were a female, sorry.
Female,
or a guy to guy.
Yeah. That's a different situation. We just a quick thing. I just wanted to bug.
I would never do that too.
Then again, I don't even know about that, but that's a whole other conversation.
No, I don't. It's what I just,
if a girl deserves it and a guy's got to hit her, do it.
Nah.
If she's wailing on you and she's causing issues and you got to take her out in one shot because she hit her. She is trying to play the girl card and that's bullshit.
I understand you feel it, but it's just like...
I know you're a guy.
I'm also a black man.
I know. You're right.
It's just like...
You're right.
It don't matter.
It won't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
You are 100% right.
So that's a whole...
And that sucks.
Yeah.
It sucks for you, man. I'm so mad about that.
It's, you know what I'm saying?
For you.
So it's ugly.
Okay.
But also, you know, so it's all good. I just think, I'm like, man, what am I gonna ask next? You know what I'm saying? But no, I fucked with you. You know what I'm saying? Dude, so on your podcast, what was someone that you interviewed? What was a memorable podcast either from... someone you didn't expect that you'd be able to interview, or just the conversation was so just fire?
Ooh, that's a good question. With all of those ones that I've done.
I could try and give a guess. Is that one band that you said to listen to that was really funny throughout the whole podcast?
Oh, you mean my friends at Korean Fire Drill?
Korean Fire Drill?
That's their band?
No, it was like a Christmas. It was a Christmas podcast. It was like a band that was like comedic.
Yeah, it, they're it Korean fire like, drill. They're a comedy rock band.
How did you,
yeah,
like a band did you not guess that by the name?
No, I don't know. Do I had to get...
Check the time?
Yeah.
Just want to see how deep we're in.
Go ahead.
Oh, because you're editing it?
Yeah.
So I would say yes, except I'm going to go a different route with that and say the one, because it went, it was my very first one.
Oh,
and it was because we were discussing Straight Outta Compton was a movie about to come out.
Yeah.
And we went on a deep talk about, and the movie hadn't come out yet though. I still watch that movie over and over again. So the artists that I had in studio were a hip hop producer artist, male black, and then a female white singer-songwriter. So, and I bring that up only because it was good to have both perspectives.
Yeah.
And the producer is old enough that he was even reminiscing that he had family members that marched with Martin Luther King, and he also had family members that were living in Compton at the time that the riots went down because of Rodney King,
yeah,
which is a huge portion of that movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it was, we went so deep in discussing the differences between there and now. And even one of the things I remember bringing up, we talked about how, you know, when you see that and you realize the power that police officers would wield over people,
yeah,
and they felt like they could just do whatever. They still do that today. But seeing what those artists had gone through, right? Which prompted Fuck the Police, one of the best songs,
yeah,
ever. You know, and then, and even for me, when the movie opens up, I totally forgot because I was in high school when they did the whole battery ramps and just blew through houses in Compton with tanks. And
tanks, people.
Tanks. And I totally forgot that was a whole Nancy Reagan, Ronald Reagan thing. And it was clearly a race issue and, yeah, poor people issue.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought to myself, man, and this is America. What the hell are we doing? And seeing that, and we discussed how, you know, you remember this, and the artist that was on the show said, you know, this is different than, you know, back in like the 50s when they talked about, you know, officers were people you can go to because they got your kitty out of the tree or you could rely on them, whereas now. And I said, however, I go, are we sure? And they both stopped. I said, there wasn't this back then.
Yeah.
Rodney King was the first time officers were filmed battering somebody for no reason and still got off, right?
That's where, yeah, the whole...
But who's to say that was the first time? I go, what if they've always been that way, but no one said anything and the whole room went, oh, snap, because it gave us a whole different perspective of this whole, yeah, time we're fed bullshit.
Yeah. No, it's 100% been like that, because like even my father will tell me like times back then where it's like, but it was just like, you just got beat up by the police. That's just what happened.
That's just what happened.
At the same time, I feel like what's also changed is that, like, my grandma, who's also older than my father, also said is that back then the police were local police. You didn't know, though, like, oh, that... So everybody knew each other in the
this
community.
This is true. There was more, yeah, of a community effort.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just like, I know Willie. I've known him since he's been 12 years old, and now he's a cop now. So I know, like, everybody knows the community, but now it's... No one knows each other. So it's the racial... Because there was still racial tension back then.
Yeah.
But at least it's... I've known you since you've been 9 years old. I know your mom. Like, you over here robbing from the liquor store. Like, I'll go, yes, tell your mom.
And at the,
like,
same time, there were, yeah, cops that you, yeah, could rely on, right? Yeah. You had those community officers, whereas now you're right.
Yeah.
So, there was such a disconnect now.
Yeah. It's ugly.
It's
been ugly. But it's probably, yeah,
the course of that podcast, like, changed, made me realize how impactful podcasting is.
Oh, yeah.
Because you don't expect that to come out of the conversation. You go into it with your topics and you're like, okay, let's talk about this, and then all of a sudden something reveals.
Yeah.
Because you learn about your guests as you're talking to them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You might read some things up. Correct. This is your moment to really go, I want to know.
Yeah.
How do you feel about this, or what have you experienced, or what has this done for you? Mm-hmm. That was the teaching moment for me. That was the very first episode.
That's
dope.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's such a valuable lesson to learn on episode 1.
Yeah, totally. I was very lucky on that one, because you never know. It's a crapshoot on where an episode's going to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the people you're going to have as guests.
That's
right?
Dope. Yeah. Yeah. We definitely had to figure out. I think our biggest thing with guests was figuring out not everybody could be a guest on the podcast.
Yes.
At first, we're just like, yo, we got a podcast. Just slide through. And I was like,
mm-hmm.
So not everybody got something to talk about. But,
yeah.
But
Definitely. But then
that's a good lesson to learn.
Yeah, that's a big lesson. But at the same time, because I remember talking to him on driving one time, and I was talking to him. I was like, man, I don't know if we're going to have a guest every single week. I don't know if we're going to be able to fill that slot. And then now I'm looking at our guest list, and I'm like, man, we got to tell people, be like, yo, can you do March? Like,
and that's good.
It's good.
That's
good.
That is a good problem to have.
I'm very blessed.
I mean, what me and him are thinking, because this was, when he asked that question, we were on our way to record episode 4. Yeah. So we were like, oh, we'll do 1 week with a guest, 1 week just by ourselves. And that was seven.
I remember that.
Because just the thought of reaching out to so many guests.
I remember him talking a little bit.
Yeah.
But a little bit of it. But it wasn't the full detail.
Yeah, because we talked about it. But now we've split it up to where it's just like, oh, if you just want us talking, that's a completely different podcast that you may have to pay for. and then with the guest, then it was like you're saying. The conversations that I don't know who I heard it from. It was like, the greatest thing about a conversation is you never know where it's going to go. Mm-hmm. It's like, and never try and steer it. Like, granted, like you said, have a guideline, like stay on topic a little bit, but never be afraid. Just like let it go off the tracks and see where it goes. Because that's where you come up with your biggest, like, oh, dang moments. Mm-hmm. Like, on that same episode, we interviewed the Weirdos, and we were talking about one of their songs, and I was like, oh, are you guys going to call it this? And they were like, oh, snap, because I was making a joke about something earlier in the podcast about a joke that they made. And they were like, oh, that's the name of the new song right there.
Ah! And they did. That is awesome.
Yeah, so you never know where it's going to go, because there's been tons of times just where it's just been like, oh, I didn't even think about it like that. Oh, perspective change. Oh, what? And that's what I love about this podcast.
And I think funny one, too, real quick, I interviewed James Cavern and Hans Eberbach. And one section was where we were doing, we were trying out the top 3 male colognes and then the top 3 female perfumes and smell it. And what does that tell you? And what was hilarious about part of that was we had whole coffee beans, because you use that to clear your palate in between smells.
That is correct.
And I didn't notice it, but James Cavern had started eating them at the beginning of the pot. He thought it was a snack. I didn't notice that. My co-host noticed it, didn't say shit. And then as we get to that part of it, it comes up in the conversation. And James is like, I'm not trying to be weird. And I'm thinking, these are the worst snacks I've ever had. We're all laughing. DJ is like, I saw you. I wasn't going to say anything. I'm like, I didn't see any of it. James, are you okay? Do you need some water? Like, sometimes that stuff, so hilarious. So that was a really funny moment.
Dang.
That always bounced back to me.
Jeez. I don't know what I'm weak over more, the fact that he was eating them in the first place,
or that he kept eating.
He's like, these are the worst snacks ever, but I had breakfast today, so
it was kind of like
I'm
that.
I'm too hungry.
And the thing is with my podcast, I actually would bring food all the time, being half Filipino. Mm-hmm. So you know, it was at Noisy Snail Studios, was at the producer's home in a spare room like this, in a really nice house out in Lincoln. And so when they came in, the green room was the child's toy room, and then the kitchen, I laid out hella snacks. They had beers, I had snacks, so people could eat and drink before and bring the beer onto the show.
Yeah.
So I thought, there's snacks out there, James. Yeah. Why would you think I would? It was hilarious. There was better stuff out in the kitchen. Why are you eating that, fool?
Man.
It was hilarious.
That's funny. That is funny. So what's next for Mickey?
Oh, gosh. Good question. Oh, I tell you what. And you know what? Anyone who's listening to this, know that you're not the only one who has been going through a really tough time. These last 2 years, 18 months especially, for me personally, have been quite the shit show. And it was personal things that had happened in my life that took me to a point where I had to withdraw completely from working, other than working with the Women's International Music Network. I always want to stay with that. You know, it's a paid gig, but it's like my music family. They've been there for me.
Yeah.
But I had to put my own brand on hold, to the point where I was losing desire to even want to continue. Mm-hmm. And that's real talk.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm glad I took that time. And so know that if that's what you're going through, follow that and it's okay. Sometimes you have to metaphorically die to come back the real you. And not to say that my brand wasn't something great, but it doesn't also mean that now that I've taken that break, I've healed, I learned more about myself. Yeah. I've cut out unnecessary people and unnecessary drive. Learned more about myself so that when this brand pops out, because I'm looking to bring my podcast back.
Yeah.
Different. Mm-hmm. Brand it different. And who I will work with. I don't know if I want to wait till 2020 to do an official launch or do a soft launch by Christmas time. Mm-hmm. Because that's giving me deadlines. And I'll be honest, it's been such a struggle. Deadlines have not been my thing. I went from being the most punctual, driven, I've got things laid out to, I couldn't tell you what I'm going to do tomorrow other than wake up and work.
Yeah.
It's been like that. Yeah. Did I get sleep? Am I drinking water? Right? Did I have a reason to smile today? It's been that for the longest time. Whereas now, and then we'll go into a good thing that happened to me when I was Lyft driving. Did you see my live thing about the woman that I had as a passenger, and we ended up like kind of vibing?
Oh, no.
This is where I know that I'm coming back.
Yeah.
Because I had a really horrible breakup with a girlfriend 2 years ago. And it was the first girlfriend in 8 years, right? Because after I was engaged, like in 2008, and then we had this breakup, and then I just really dove into working in music, and that was my life. I didn't have any relationships. I fooled around, had, well, come on now. Yeah. But I didn't have relationships, right? I mean, I wasn't celibate. But, you know, I played, but I didn't have anyone to call my boo.
Yeah.
And then I did, but it was not good. So then I got to where I just wasn't trusting women. I didn't trust women to talk to me. I wasn't into that. And then I'm driving in San Francisco, and I'm not going to mention names. I'm trying to protect this person. I'm just, picked up this woman. I don't know her age. Maybe it was early 30s, which is another reason this ain't going to work because that's 20 years difference. But her and her aunt and uncle, and they're from England. So the accent was just like, pick them up from dinner. And so it was a two drop. We had to drop off the aunt and uncle to their hotel.
Yeah.
And then I take her home.
Yeah.
And it was an interesting talk because she had just revealed to her aunt and uncle that she's queer.
Yeah.
They didn't know this whole time. And she was married before. She actually said that she had married someone to come into the country.
Okay.
Wow.
Right. Arranged marriage.
Yeah.
And then it just didn't pan out because she's very, she doesn't like to use the word pansexual, but she's very much attracted to the soul. So she's had feelings for women, for trans, for men, like it's just the soul
she's
thing.
Like people.
We're vibing like no other. So, and this is what was interesting. We drop off the aunt and uncle, and they're so adorable. And the aunt was sitting behind me, and she reaches around, touches my shoulder, and said, "It was so wonderful meeting you, darling. Perhaps we will see you if you get married." And I thought that was the weirdest thing ever. Okay. Like,
who says that?
But it's an English thing. Maybe it's an English thing because they discussed.
I've done a lot of lives. No one's ever said that to me. Mm-hmm. So
they said to their niece, "We'll see you in New York."
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, I guess she's engaged to get married, and they're thinking, that's the weirdest thing.
Invite me to the wedding or something?
I don't know. And then so now it's just us, and it's like a 15-minute drive to get to her place. Because I'm telling you, driving around San Francisco is not quick.
Yeah, it's not.
And we're vibing on amazing conversation, and just, like, it's there. And she's, like, touches me a couple times as we're talking. I'm like, okay. And then so go to drop her off. And first of all, I totally missed the cue that I think she wanted me to give her my number or something because she turns to me, puts her hand out and goes, "My name is blah, blah, blah." And like an idiot, instead of shaking the hand and saying something, I went, "Oh yeah, I know because it's on my app."
Damn. Not the player move.
It's not.
Yeah.
Now, mind you, I didn't dawn on me until after I drop her off.
Yeah,
because
I thought,
what did I just do?
This is a total,
this is a total John Waters stupid teen movie of me fucking up a goddamn woman just giving me the go-ahead.
Yeah.
But then she says, "Can I at least hug you? That was a lot that we just experienced." And I said, "Absolutely." And she reaches over and hugs me and she kisses me on the cheek.
Yeah.
Well, that's a European thing, is the one they greet and...
Not the way she kissed me.
Not
the way she kissed me.
No.
Because that would have been on the... Like, I say cheek, but it was more near the neck... By the ear. That's not a European thing.
Oh.
The cheek, yes.
Yeah, the cheek right there.
And it was like full lips. Like, I felt those lips. I'm telling you. And so then it was like, you know, goodbye. And
wrapped in this.
Man, right? I was cheesing after dropping her off.
I know.
I was cheesing after I dropped her off and I realized, oh, she wanted me to, because what I should have done. No.
Oh,
because that's stalking. What I should have done. Was, reach your hand up. "My name is Mickey. I really, truly enjoy this conversation. Would you like to continue this on another day?"
Yeah.
is what I should have said.
Yeah, would have been the move.
But now, but this is the thing also, and my roommate was giving me shit about it. She goes, do we have to work on you being a Mac? I understand something. Hold on. I'm also not trying to come off as a douchebag.
Yeah.
Because this is a professional ride. Yeah. And if I did read wrong into it, now I'm going to get a bad rating and it's horrible. Like, I don't want her to think that I drive around picking up women all the time. Like, I'm not, I'm a woman. So I'm not trying to give that vibe either. Yeah. I just think I went too far south on not trying to be a gentleman, so to speak. That would have been the better. Reach the hand out, said the name, eye contact. I would love to continue this conversation another time if you'd like to.
Yeah.
But what was cool and important about that interaction was that I realized I actually liked that. And I haven't liked a woman approaching me in 2 years.
That's lit.
That felt good. Yeah. It felt good to actually feel Twitter-pated by a woman who was interested in me.
What was that word you just said?
Twitter-pated. Versus putting a wall up and going, she's a hoe or she's an ass or whatever I want to make up in my head to say that I'm not ready.
Yeah.
So I thought, and then also too, running into people talking about podcasting and doing other things, I'm like, I think I'm ready.
Yeah. Ready to be podcasting. I'm ready for love.
You know because we've got NAMM coming up. She Rock Awards is coming up. I think I'm prepping myself for... That's the reason I also say the 2020 launch. Because I'm prepping myself for my interactions and my collaborations with those. Because I was looking to move to LA last year. That was the other thing.
Okay.
Oh. That's the reason I started driving for Lyft. Because I was going to save up the money. And then that was going to be the transition. I had a job lined up last year.
Yeah.
Down in LA.
Yeah.
I was set, but so many things happening with my family, my sister dying, my mom being in and out of the hospital, I stayed behind because I didn't want to travel, but also, too, I was scared. Mm-hmm. The cost of living is ridiculous.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
Here.
Yeah.
I don't want to fail and come back.
Yeah.
I want to make sure that my head space, and I'm glad I chose to stay because I have not been okay for a while, right? Emotionally, psychologically. And I wasn't going to make my move to L.A., be that much of a shit show. So, maybe 2020 I scout.
Mm-hmm.
2020 is the launch. 2020 is the collaboration with everyone at NAMM. And then I find sponsors or I find...
Everything falls into place.
Yes. Because I'm now ready.
Yeah.
Because if I can smile because a woman found me, and it was the conversation too. Yeah. You could tell it wasn't like, oh, I just think you're hot. It was like, we vibed.
Yeah, and you got that conversation...
And I actually engaged.
Yeah.
I'm like, Mick, you're ready.
Yeah.
You're ready to tackle the world again.
Yeah.
Hence, I'm here with you.
Yeah.
I would not have said yes to you 2 months ago. I would not have even asked you could I have been 4 months ago. I wasn't in the headspace, you know?
Yeah. Oh.
You have to be ready. You can't force these things.
Of course.
I've done enough. When I look back at my, I have to look back at myself to realize I am the shit.
Mm-hmm.
You forget when you're down in the dumps. You forget when you're in the hole of depression.
Yeah.
I had to look back at my resume on my LinkedIn and go, shit, I've accomplished a lot of shit. I'm kind of a fucking badass. All right.
Yeah.
Got to put those badass pants back on.
Yeah, where I put them motherfuckers at?
Yes.
It fit perfectly.
So this book, me and him have been reading. I don't know if you know David Goggins at all.
I don't.
Oh, man.
I just started with chapter 1, too.
Great dude. Like, a specimen of a human being, not just like physically, but mentally.
He's trying to be the most badass motherfucker on earth.
Yeah. Hardest motherfucker.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who call him like the toughest dude on this planet. Like,
why is he like physically tough or emotionally tough?
Physically tough, but mentally, like, his childhood was just complete shit. Like, basically, grew up in Indiana. Sorry,
Brazil, Indiana.
Dude, you never mentioned how much he was fucking abused as a child.
Well, dude, there's so much in his life. You can't just like do it in 30 seconds. But yes,
he started getting beat. The dude, his story. Hey, sorry, this because they
sorry for everyone on the podcast. We've talked about David Goggins at least in 5 episodes.
Yeah, but this is my because they've been talking about it for a minute. Like, because I also got the book, but I was reading this other book. So I want to give you that first. But I just started getting through like chapter one today. Yo, he was talking about his ass beat in the first grade. It was ugly, ugly.
Yeah,
ass beat. Parents, first grade.
Yeah, dad beat the hell out of him. Moved to
Eat the shit out of the whole family.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Beat the shit out of the whole family. My apologies. But
very serious.
Grew up in Indiana, from 20 miles from where the KKK was. He was a black man, just
literally
everything you can think of. And he got to the point in life where he was just like super overweight, just like at a terrible job and stuff. He was just like, holy shit, I'm what people said I was. And he's like, I'm gonna fucking change that. And he saw a Marine commercial. He's like, alright, I'm gonna become a Marine.
And Navy SEAL.
He was like, no, I'm gonna become a Navy SEAL, not a Marine, a Navy SEAL, like one of the toughest dudes. So he's ended up like if you look at his resume of stuff like he's done. So he's become a Navy SEAL, Army Ranger, has the world record for the most pull-ups in 24 hours, does ultra runs, so like over 100 miles all the time and stuff, and just but the stuff.
So he's super fit.
So he's super fit, but
and
the
super
way,
focused.
Super focused, but the way he's changed his mentality from the his pain discipline to everything. And one of the things that he talks about is the cookie jar, which is basically what you're talking about. Whereas it's like, he's like, I had to look back into my past and see the little things I've done. Also, like, mentally challenged, mental stuff, like, because he couldn't read. Like, he was, like, he was in the Army, but he didn't know how to read. So he had to teach himself how to read, how to do the book, how to do everything. And it would just take hours upon hours upon hours. So the whole thing about the cookie jar is you go back on your life and you see the shit that you've done. You write down all the stuff you've done. You keep writing it down, all the stuff. So when you are in those times, you look at it like, yeah, I'm feeling like shit right now and I don't think very good of myself. But I've done this. Oh shit, okay, maybe I can get up tomorrow with a little better attitude.
I actually started that. It's right next to my bed. I put the overcome jar and I would write down whatever overcoming or short-term goal I...
Good for you.
Yeah.
And those things matter.
Yes, definitely. And accountability mirror. Don't forget
that's
that.
My favorite word, accountability. I love that word.
So, okay, so one more question. I know we're like getting like hella long.
It's
like
going to be a good... Literally,
you'll have to edit some of that beginning stuff out.
So literally, every time I ask him, like, it was like, hey, can I get the time just so we can gauge like how far we are? Like, he's usually like 30, like 45. It's like, okay, we got a little bit longer. This is the first time I asked him, and he said 72 minutes.
And well, was, if you don't count the prep beforehand, well,
still, still, it's over an hour. I've never been like this engaged in a conversation with someone and just like rambling, just be like, oh my god, we're this deep into it.
I know we're this deep into it. That's crazy.
And that was about that was about a half hour ago. So we're getting close to 2 hours.
Oh yeah,
this is juicy.
It's crazy.
You're all juicy.
So accountability. That's like major. You can't feel like you can set goals, but if you don't have the accountability, they're not goals no more. It's just some shit on a to-do list. How do you keep yourself accountable? Is it like you just looking at yourself in the mirror, or do you have accountability partners? How do you go about it?
So I'm going to have to go back to my past for that, because I just explained to you where I've been a recluse and pulled back from everybody. But when I crushed the goals that I did when I did it, it was honestly, it's knowing I don't care so much how people see me as how I see myself. And what I project out there, because I want what I want to bring back what I put out into the world. When people ask me who is the most influential person you've ever interviewed, that was the aha moment. I interviewed Chaka Khan.
Oh.
And for me, see the eyebrows. And for me, it was one of the most nerve-wracking ones, because it was the second year I was asked to host the Red Carpet Awards at the She-Rock Awards. Okay. And this was before they offered me a paid gig to work for the Women's International Music Network. And Chaka Khan was one of the artists we honored. I was going to be the only one she allowed to talk to. Everyone could take photos of her. But because I worked with the company I worked with, and it was part of the She-Rocks, she agreed to talk. Yeah. And I had 2 minutes. I had 2 minutes with everybody, because you have to time it, right?
Yeah.
Before we get into the award show. And I thought, oh my God, Chaka Khan, oh my God. My pits are sweating. Like, they're letting us know, okay, the limo's showing up. Okay, she's coming out, you know. And I had to, you know, figure out my question. But something she said, and it was so quick, and I hold it to heart, when I had asked her, you've been doing this for so long, the Grammys, the da-da-da, how do you feel your impact is on people? And she says, we are here to be of service to everyone, you and me. I'm here to be of service for what I do, you are. That's what she said. We are here to be of service to everyone. And I thought, that's a good one to go by.
Yeah.
So if I can't be accountable for myself and do the things that I do, I'm setting the precedence for someone who you never know. People are looking up to you. People are looking up to you. People are looking up to you. And you may never know.
Yeah.
Especially with social media and the world watching 24/7. You never know the life you're impacting, right? You as a person were impacted by somebody.
Yeah.
That's what I keep in mind to keep myself accountable. Because I know one point goes bad, it's like any bad habit, I'm just going to get into that rut. I make sure I'm on time with things. I make sure stories go out on time. I make sure if I say I'm going to meet with you, we're going to do this, I do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's going to frame, when I look back on all that I accomplished, I'll be proud of that.
Yeah.
Right? Because if I weren't, I wouldn't be able to go back on that. I tell, whenever I talk to students, I say, Google your name. What comes up?
Yeah.
Because people talk about you, right? Or they don't talk about you or your accomplishments. Is it going to be a bunch of things that you've accomplished? Or is it going to be people ragging on you on Twitter or Facebook, right?
Yeah, yeah.
People creating a website that you suck. I know people personally from Sacramento who have been such douche canoes that people have created entire like Instagrams or Facebooks on the hate for them. Whether it's them as a person or them as a company.
Damn.
Right? Damn. So I want it to be opposite that. I want to be able to be the person that inspired me. So when I went gaga over Chaka Khan and then what she said to me, believe it or not, someone else might take that word. And it's not a stance of ego, it's a stance of responsibility.
Yeah.
The accountability is partnered with responsibility. And I feel responsible for what I put out into the universe. Not only does it come back to me, but it's going to come back to everyone else it touches. And that's the ripple effect, right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't know who that's going to touch. This podcast and the lives you touch reaches far more than anyone's ever giving you feedback. Know that.
Yeah.
You might get 5 feedbacks out of 7,000 people who are listening and touched by what you talk about on the show.
Yeah.
Perspective.
Yeah, that's...
Damn.
Yeah.
That is like...
That's how you do it.
Probably the best way to wrap this one up. That could be her her thing to tell the audience then.
Yeah.
Wow.
Meditate on that.
And it's a positive thing. Not even do it out of guilt or fear, but that should pump you up.
Yeah,
That's a community thing, right? Yeah,
because my rather be I don't feel like that part's. I always go like back and forth as an artist, where it's just like I feel like I'm the hot shit, but then be like I can't believe anybody will listen to me at the same time.
And so we all do it.
Yeah,
I still do it.
Yeah, so it's. I know that, so it's because it's like people hit me up and they're like, yeah, I fuck with your shit, but I never think about that. And that's something I feel like I need to think about and just be like, the person on the other end. Because a part of me is even just like, hard believing that person's even there. You know what I'm saying? Like the person who would sit down, like, oh, let me listen to Najee's new shit. You know what I'm saying? Being like, oh, yeah, this song makes me feel good. Like, that thought, like, I'm so, like, because to me that's such, like a honorable thought, especially, like, as a musician, like, that's, like, the number one goal as a musician. So the fact that it actually happening is, to me, it's just like, fuck, like, you actually fuck with my shit.
Blows your mind, doesn't it? It makes it real.
Yeah.
Blew my mind with this whole podcast when people were telling us, like, even a couple weeks ago, like, I met a dude at a bar, and he was just like, oh, yeah, Psych Vibes, I've definitely heard of you guys.
What the fuck?
Yeah. I was like, definitely. I was just like...
Isn't that an awesome feeling?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
But I also... Actually, I don't even talk about it here, but, like, basically...
But you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just...
That impact, you reach... Yeah. Thanks to the internet, you reach more people than you will ever know. And definitely don't ego off of it, but just know that be conscious of what you put out into the universe.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Always with intention. Because without it, why are you doing it?
Yeah.
That's my take. I'm intense with intent. Always.
Intense with intent. Yo, put that on a fucking t-shirt.
Oh, my God. Now, that's the... Oh, my God.
Oh man, where can people find you, Mickey?
Yeah,
everywhere. It's actually I know, right? No, my name. It's really easy. It's MYKIANGELINE. You just Google that; it all comes up. I made sure that all of my social media is my name to make it that easy. In fact, I'm sitting on my website. I bought the domain in 2016. I'm sitting on it. I got to get it going. But yeah, that's how you find me. Everywhere.
By the way, sackvibes.com just renewed. Way more expensive on the renewal.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
So like you popping now, we gonna tax you.
Lovely. Don't you love that?
Yeah. Yes. A year ago you guys were shit.
All right.
Yeah, thank you for coming through.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah,
this has been
an
amazing podcast.
Our camera angle is better, you know what I'm saying? People who watch this, they would know that. You gotta thank Mickey for our brand new
I do appreciate that.
Yeah. I told you that when women come on our podcast, it just gets better.
Dude, it definitely.
For real. Remember when Teresa came on?
When Teresa came, like, that thumbnail took like 45
minutes. We had a
model.
But it was the best thumbnail we ever had.
By far.
By far.
By far.
There you go.
So on that note, let's take a thumbnail.
All right.
Let's go watch it later, Zulus.
Whatevers.